Welcome to another Wednesday night event in this year of studying kindness, compassion, and wish for everybody to be completely awake and free from suffering, and taking up the responsibility to make sure that happens eventually. We just had a session talking about bodhicitta, this altruistic intention to be a Buddha. But it might be helpful to go back to loving kindness, metta in Pali, maitri in Sanskrit. Anyone remember the definition of kindness, loving kindness? From a few weeks ago. Okay, I'll tell you and test you next time. I mean, it's kind of interesting when I thought, well, what, you know, it maybe seems simple, but it strikes me that loving kindness and compassion are actually, they're mental states, according to the classic teachings of the Buddha. And the course of mental states can result in kind activity and compassionate activity, but they're really basically defined as like a state of mind. So kindness, metta, maitri, is usually defined as a wish, actually. Something like a wish that all beings be happy. So, in the Metta Sutta, it has that line, may all beings be happy. So that's kind of like the example of what metta looks like, is this may they be, that kind of intention. Which just goes to show, as usual, that all these practices of the Buddha are like training the mind and shaping the mind in different ways that will have different effects in the world, but we emphasize working with the mental states. So loving kindness, or friendliness we could also call it, is, you know, technically wishing may all beings be happy and have the causes of happiness. Basic happiness, like well-being. And compassion is very similar. It's another wish that all beings be free from suffering. Which sounds kind of like the same thing. So they're quite similar, but a little bit different. One's this kind of positive wish for the happiness. And it's, I think, a little bit more to contemplate it and work with this mind state is generally like a very happy thing to do. For oneself, compassion may be happy, but because we're contemplating more the suffering that people or other living beings are in, and we're wishing them to be free, we're kind of tuning into the suffering realm, so it might not be quite as exuberant as just wishing that all beings be happy. It's a little different flavor. So there's like wishes or intentions, and I think bodhicitta can also be seen as a wish or intention. Because intention, it is said, creates the world. Everything that we see around us started with intention. Definitely, you know, all the things that people have made in the world and what people are doing. Did intention, like, make all of us? Well, in a way, when I look around and see all of you, an intention made this particular form of you, that sitting on that seat, like an intention got us each to the seat that we're in. So in that way, intention even makes like, maybe we could even say inanimate things are made by intention, because they're when we're relating to them, it's our intention to look at that particular rock. That might be going a little far with it, but I think in general we can say that everything that the world is created by intention. So therefore, we're, in the practice, we're really looking at carefully studying our intentions and developing them. Wishing that all beings be happy and have the causes of happiness and be free from suffering. So like I was just on this trip to India, so saw a lot of suffering, and it would have been hard to avoid contemplating the suffering of people and other beings, seeing so much of it, just in terms of poverty and physical deformity due to various conditions and diseases that we don't have much in these parts, like leprosy. Seeing people in difficulty in a kind of widespread way, and then coming back from that land, one of the many flight transfers I had was in Chicago. I was in the Chicago airport in a kind of like a daze. I often think of this Shoho and I talk about this trip to go to Nepal or India. It's generally like 30 or 40 hours of travel, and it's kind of like, we call it the airport bardo. It's kind of like you're here and you're in a life, and then you get there and you're in a life, but there's this in-between state that's like you don't know what time it is or what day it is, or often you don't even remember what country you're in. All these shiny neon fluorescent airports all look the same, and they're like 24 hour lit. Anyway, I was in one of those states getting closer to home, and somebody came up and said, "Oh, excuse me, sir, can I ask you a big favor?" And I've been meditating and contemplating bodhisattva practices, so I think I said, "Okay." Instead of, "Well, depends what it is." I said, "Okay," but internally I think there was some hesitation, like, I don't know what I just agreed to. And then he proceeded to explain his story, and this was like, a well-dressed young man, maybe in his 30s, with a handbag, shoulder bag, and like he was one of the many people in the airport. And he said, we were on an escalator, so we were kind of captive. We were riding slowly down the escalator, and he said, he was very like animated, very, very extrovert type. "You're not going to believe what just happened. My car just got towed. I just parked right outside." As you do in the airport, you're not supposed to park there, right? "I just parked to drop off my friend. I came in to see him off. 30 seconds later, it was like a minute, and it was gone. I can't believe it. And it's like $150 to get the car back from where the airport lot." And it's like, actually, I can kind of imagine that. And in this particular airport, there were, every few minutes, there were these, tape loop recordings. "Please do not park your car in front of the airport. It will be immediately towed." So I'm like, well, it could be so. But as he's telling this story very animatedly, my little wheels are turning, right? And it's like, It's like, this would be a really great airport scam. He could probably make like several hundred dollars a day doing this because he's such a good actor. Even if he's not acting, he's very animated and very confident in his spiel. And so he says, and he's kind of like really like cursing and like, I can't believe this happened. And I just, and it was, getting late at night, and he's like, I don't have the money to get my car right now, so I just got to take the public transit back to Chicago, which is like an hour away from the airport or something. And I get my car tomorrow because I got to go to work in the morning. It's a, a very legitimate sounding story, but I thought still very, you could really craft a nice story like that. So he's like, it's $14. It's like a kind of a lot for public transit, but I think it was. Chicago is pretty far, isn't it, from the airport? No? He said like the shuttle or something. So, yeah, so, right. Could I say, well, really, it's that much? Couldn't you take a slower bus? And he's like, it's late at night, I have work early in the morning, and if you can loan me this money, I promise I will send it back. And just give me your address and I'll send it right back. I just, I don't know what to do. So, and I don't know what to do, right? But I'm like, and partly it was like I'm coming from this place where people, $14 you could probably live on for like half a year. Or, a month or two maybe. It's a lot. And people are not, could really use that. And I would, gave probably a lot more than that gradually through India. But here's this one person just wants this just to go home. But I'm like, but then I thought, well, if I was him, what would I do? And like, I don't know if I'd have the nerve to just go up to someone and ask them. I mean, sometimes I've been in those situations in recent, because I don't have a cell phone. So sometimes I'm traveling and I miss a connection or something. Oh, I got a call, but I got to ask someone for their cell phone. Quite hard to do, to ask strangers like that. The couple of times I have asked for a cell phone, people have often said no. Sometimes they'll say, oh, sure, yeah, please go ahead. Sometimes, no, it's a company phone. You can't use it. Well, this a local call. No. It's policy. It's interesting when asking for things to see reactions. It's probably interesting for this guy to see different people's reactions if he did ask many people, which I'm thinking now he probably did, and maybe still does. So I thought, well, I'm trying to do this bodhisattva practice, I even thought, should I be totally upfront with him and say, this sounds like a good airport scam? I mean, I really want to believe you, but I'm actually thinking that this probably thing happens in the airports all the time. So, I'm trying to decide whether to believe you or not. But I'm like, it's kind of rude if he's really being honest. It's maybe not such a good, as a practitioner, maybe that's too doubting. Somebody's kind of like, sincere thing. I'm like, well, I really don't know. It's 50-50. I'm kind of have the intuition that maybe it's not true. But, as a practice, I think the practice now is to give him this, I felt like. I'm like, well, and then I see, I only have a 20. Do you have change for 20? Oh, no, I don't. But I'll send it right back, so, So, that was a couple weeks ago, right? And I haven't gotten anything back, so it looks like it's probably an airport scam. Although he could have forgotten or lost my little scrap of paper with the address. I could think that, but... but I don't actually mind so much. Except maybe that because I felt like, well, that's just my practice, I'm just going to give regardless of the outcome. But what maybe would hurt the most is not so much about the money, but more like if there's a deceptive relationship that kind of like violates what I was trying to not violate myself, right? So And I thought afterwards, what if I had another chance, would I have done something differently? And I thought, well, maybe there's a way that I would feel really wholehearted if I thought about it at the time, to say like, well, you know, this is the kind of thing that there's all kinds of airport scams like this, but you know, you seem really sincere. I really want to believe you, and I'm going to give you this. And you know, I really want to trust humanity. And if you want to like renew my trust in humanity, just send it back to me. And if you want to kind of blow that and live in a world like that, then don't worry about it. Don't send it back. And kind of leave it to him. You know, make it more explicit to point that to him. Because he could have gone away thinking, got another one, perfect, another sucker. So, but anyway, situations like that, it's like, for me, I felt like at the time, this is a mind training thing for me. It's like, if I don't give it and say, well, that's actually too much, and why don't you ask somebody else, and I'm sorry, sir, bye. Which probably a lot of people would also do that. I felt like, no, that's from my own mind. It was, you know, this funny thing is loving kindness practice is kind of for the other person, but kind of for ourself. Even in the, I think the Mahayana teachings, it's often presented more like it really is to benefit others. But, in the Visuddhimagga, you maybe know that, like a Theravada meditation manual, where it's that these are teachings in these, you know, Pali canon too. Buddha teaches loving kindness and compassion, and so on. But it looks like in that manual, they're more like they're meditation objects to concentrate the mind. They're not so much like be good to other people. They're more like cultivate these states in your meditation, because they're called like the boundlessness, the immeasurables, or the divine abodes, because they're like, you can open this really kind of spacious, buoyant feeling in meditation and become more concentrated through that feeling to develop insight. That's kind of how I understand it, looking in this meditation manual. It's not so much about because the other people will be happy. It's a more internal training. But I think it's actually both. It's for both ourselves and others. That's what's so nice about kindness and compassion. And in Zen tradition, you know, these are not emphasized so much as like specific practices, right? I think of the Zen literature classically as like the koans. And I even started looking through some of the koan collections, maybe Neti can remember some, to find something really specifically about, and really tangibly about kindness or compassion. And it's hard. I couldn't really find anything like that. Maybe one of the last stories I brought up about attendant Wo passes tea, and the teacher kind of insults the teacher, and the teacher kind of pats him on the back. It's a little bit like that, when being pushed, being kind back. That's a little element of it. But they're really more about wisdom. If we look at wisdom and compassion as these two sides, the Zen teachings are about breaking through the barriers of falsely conceived duality and opening to our true nature, which is naturally compassionate and kind. That's how I'd understand the secret of the Zen style. It's going like, let's not even mess around with training the mind in these gradual ways. Let's just go right to the source of, you know, awaken your nature, and then compassion and kindness will just naturally radiate out because they're qualities of our nature. But they don't say that. They're just like, we just do this and then that will be the result. And if you look at great Zen practitioners, I think that is often the result. They are kind and compassionate. But other traditions of Buddha Dharma have more explicit practices or kind of gradual development, more in the conventional world, training the mind in these ways. And I think they can be valuable for us. We have a kind of like the ultimate practices of just drop off body and mind, where our nature of kindness and compassion is revealed. And then we have the more conventional practices of like mind training that we can actually, that again I think are not so much part of traditional Zen practice, but we can take them up because we know about them. So kindness is sometimes, occasionally, like Dogen will bring it up. I think Dogen has a kind of strict side, but he has I feel like he has this compassionate heart expression that he sometimes brings up. So one of the most clear, obvious places is the Tenzo Kyokun that Kathy's going to teach this fall. The three minds of the Tenzo, of that cook, but the three minds of all practitioners, really. And one of them is called kind mind. Kind mind. And Dogen says, kind mind is parental mind, or grandparent mind, we might say. That's just like this natural care. Just as parents care for their children, we should bear in mind the three treasures. So he's talking to the cook about serving meals to the Sangha. But we could say, just as parents are kindly care for their children, we can care for the community we practice with and our friends and the wider Sangha of the whole universe too. Even poor or suffering people raise their children with deep love. Their hearts cannot be understood by others. And I think he even says something like, if you're not a mother or father, you can't understand this. I'm like, well, Dogen wasn't a mother or father in this life. Maybe he wishes to understand that mind. The parents pay no attention to whether they themselves are cold or hot, but they cover their children to protect them from the cold and shield them from the hot sun. This is extreme kindness. So there we have a Zen teaching, pretty straight up teaching on kindness. And then we have many examples in the tradition, like Shantideva says something like, all suffering in this world comes from self-cherishing, or basically wanting ourselves to be happy. All happiness in this world comes from cherishing others, or wanting others to be happy. It's a little tricky because we do want ourselves to be happy. And when we cultivate the practices of loving-kindness in a step-by-step way, we start with ourselves. So this kind of step-by-step way, I've heard about for a long time, and but to be honest, I confess, like, I haven't really, like, tried it out until recently. Kind of feel like, it's not so much like a Zen thing. We just sit. And these are like, you know, it seems too contrived. And yet, I feel like, because we're studying this at this time, I'm like, well, let's check it out. And I feel like, immediately, I feel like, wow, this is just amazing, wonderful practice. So we actually can direct it towards ourselves. Some people might feel that this wish to be happy, we direct towards ourselves. And some might feel that's kind of hard, actually, like we don't deserve it. It's easier to direct it towards others. I think that's maybe this low self-esteem thing, or like, and maybe Shantideva can kind of promote that of like, you know, all suffering comes from wanting ourselves to be happy. But I think self-cherishing is a nice way to put it. In an overly done, you know, attached kind of self-cherishing, at the expense, in a kind of cut-off way from others. But one little trick sometimes said is, like, if we have a hard time saying, may I be happy, it's too close. Almost like just thinking of ourselves as one of the other sentient beings in the room. And so even to say, may this person be happy, or may Kokyo be happy, almost like third person, might make it a little bit easier, actually. If we have this kind of like, not me, I don't deserve it, but maybe Kokyo does. I think it's just like when we, something about using the word I or me constricts that sense of self more. Like if we're trying to find this illusory sense of the truly existent self, which really can't be found, but if we're trying to locate the feeling of it, to say I, we feel that contraction into the little self more than you, Kokyo. Something about these words I and me, they're so close to home. So may this person, may this body and mind be happy. And then another, maybe equally, maybe even easier way is you think of someone who's, you know, been really kind to us, a kind benefactor in our life. So traditionally it's often like parents, but since some people have a hard time with their parents, you know, choose someone or multiple people. We can try different people because it's nice to not, you know, to stay with one person. But everybody's had people that have been kind benefactors for them. And for me, I've, you know, tried it out with my mother, who I feel like has been quite kind to me. And first, I think maybe first, helpful, to before we just direct loving kindness at this kind benefactor, to feel their kindness towards us, which is what makes them the benefactor. And again, it might be quite hard to, like, even imagining this, to just receive an almost like an unconditional love. Maybe it doesn't even have to be unconditional, but just someone who, a time when somebody has kind of looked at us or related to us with just loving kindness, just for who we are, without even that we did anything special. That's why parents are good like this, right? Because you don't even have to do anything special, usually, for a parent to have some moments of, I just appreciate this person because of who they are. So we imagine that coming to us, and it might be kind of hard to take. Really? But I don't know. But we feel that, and of course, if we're open to it, it feels great. And then, I think, I notice that when I do that, as soon as I feel that, I immediately, there's the sense of like, of course I want this person to be happy. It's like, it's not even like, well, I should repay their kindness. I don't think it's not, I think that's, eventually it might start having to, we might have to start thinking that way. But with this, you know, a really kind benefactor, it's totally natural. We don't have to think, well, I should wish them happy. We naturally feel that way. And I think this is the case because at that moment, I would propose that that's actually like our Buddha nature. We're actually like, we're like in touch with our true nature that actually is just, has this warm connection with someone. Our actual true nature has this warm connection with everyone, like impartially, but we're like opening up a little window in it through this relationship with our mother, for example. May she be happy. I really wish that she's happy. And we don't have to think about her suffering or something that maybe comes in with the compassion part, But I just, whatever, however she is right now, I really hope she's happy. It's such a completely natural part of who we are with somebody who's like that. And so the things I noticed, maybe this is so totally obvious, and other people have tried this, but you know, when I look at this myself, I kind of discover these simple things, like, for one thing, that it doesn't take any effort to feel that when we feel their love. And for another thing, as soon as I feel, may they be happy, I feel, like, really happy. Or more happy than before that thought. Wow. And happy means, doing this in Zazen, you can notice your state. You're already practicing mindfulness of body and feelings and mind to some extent. Because we're just sitting here. So I immediately notice, like, my body, when I generate that thought, my body actually feels different. It was a little bit of a surprise. Body feels like more relaxed, more open, and if I was feeling a little bit like concerned about other stuff before doing this, it's like that stuff kind of like disappears, which makes me think, like, this is why in the Visuddhimagga they use this as a concentration object. It's not just a random object of concentration, it's that it kind of like it's this relaxed, spacious, I would say buoyant kind of feeling. Maybe quite subtle, but that little shift may be easier to settle into Zazen. So I think we could actually apply this if we're sitting Zazen and our Zazen feels kind of dry, or maybe kind of like feeling a little dull, and like we're just here because it's time for Zazen. You probably know this feeling, right? Yeah, I'm just here, my mind's kind of like doing its thing. Oh yeah, sit, come back to the present, come on, do it. That kind of mind. So then we could like try out such a meditation if we want. We could say, well, let me just think of like somebody in my life, a kind benefactor. And then, again, they don't have to be like always kind or some flawless person. It's going to be impossible. But just somebody who's at some time, maybe they're actually usually kind of obnoxious to us. I think that still works, but I remember this one time, this obnoxious person was actually genuinely, it felt like a genuine warm kindness. And I remember this moment. That's all it takes, I think. And then, and may they be happy too. And then, we can experiment with this and see. Maybe it enlivens, moistens our Zazen with some juicy love. And I think part of why you start that way, you start with someone like really easy like this. My guess is that it's because it's this very natural feeling. It's just, we're just opening to our actual nature. It's an aspect of Buddha nature, is also like the mind of non-duality is an aspect of it too. But it has these qualities. So even though we're maybe not realizing the realization of emptiness or non-duality, it's another aspect of that same Buddha mind, is this natural love. This I propose anyway. So we're tapping into different angles of this mind, this true nature. And when it feels very natural like that, then we can maybe, we get the sense that actually maybe it's not that big a contrivance to start trying this out with more difficult people. Or, you know, the tradition is like, then you don't go right to the most difficult, you go to like neutral people. Like, you know, when you're walking around town and strangers that you don't know, people in airports. And just, may they be happy. Yeah, I don't know what their life is, I don't know what their whole story is, but I hope that their day works out and their life works out. Like, I recall a sutra in the Pali suttas, where the Buddha is instructing the monks when they're going out collecting alms, so they're going on their daily begging round in town. And maybe it's that most of the time they're just sitting in the forest, and it's just they're alone or they're with the Sangha. And I think a monk you've asked the Buddha, well, when we're going on alms round, should we be meditating on no self or impermanence or something like that? It's like, no, when you're actually on alms round, meditate on loving kindness, or, you know, radiate loving kindness, like this wish. And it occurs to me now, maybe that's because that's their time when they actually see a bunch of random strangers. That may be harder, and maybe people give them a hard time on their alms round, like, well, I'm not going to give you anything. Go away. maybe be happy. Maybe it's easier with their fellow monks in the woods, just sitting together. So the Buddha would sometimes teach this. No, don't actually meditate on emptiness or no self when you're going into town. Try out this loving kindness practice. You could combine it eventually maybe with no self also, but maybe this is the emphasis, loving kindness. So we can, like, possible to do that, walking around town with strangers. In some ways, these kind of, like, I confess, I'm not doing this all the time. It's kind of a new thing for me, but I'm thinking, oh, this might be nice. Because often when we're walking around town, we're just, like, thinking about some distracted thing anyway. And we might say, well, I'll just follow my breath, but how many of us do that when we're walking around town? So this might be more fun than following the breath, and easier to, like, pay attention, maybe, because it's not like, don't lose a breath. It's a joyful meditation. Oh, I thought one interesting teaching about this is that, especially maybe for Zen people, when we think, well, if this is our true nature, I think this is kind of the Zen approach, as I mentioned. Our true nature is naturally like this, so let's just open to our true nature and skip these kind of conventional practices. But thinking of, like, well, even if somebody has a great skill in the world, in any, like, they're a carpenter or something, they're a natural artist or carpenter, they still have to train in that skill. They still have to actually, like, work on it. So that could apply here too, even though it is our nature. And we might realize it completely just through sitting and letting go of everything. Still, it might help to speed up the process, or to just aid the process of just sitting, even, to train the mind in this more conventional way. Another nice one is when we're not, you know, that basically the opposite of loving kindness is like anger or hatred, or even, like, on a lesser level, like annoyance or irritation with others. And so instead of thinking, if we're irritated, oh, I should, like, let me try to practice loving kindness, or even or maybe more commonly, we're not even thinking about it, but we're really, like, thinking of all the reasons why that person's so irritating. That's where our mind usually goes. Instead, like, it's kind of like a mindfulness of what's happening practice. How does this feel for me? And when we're really irritated with someone, and it's, like, totally unpleasant. But usually we don't go there. We just think we're caught up in the content of the irritation. It's always because they're like this, and they're like that, and they're there. If we think, oh, actually, mindfulness of body right now for me, if we can remember that, which is quite hard to do, right? Actually, this feels really unpleasant. And the more we maybe are practicing this loving kindness, and I know there's this other way of feeling that feels really light and buoyant, and it's kind of like the opposite of this. And so it's maybe just a little incentive to like, oh, maybe I'll try something else. So I think the teaching of just remembering to feel how painful it is for me to feel irritated at the time I'm feeling irritated. I would call this kind of an advanced practice, actually, right? It's hard, especially if we're a little irritated, especially in zazen, which can happen, right? That's maybe a good time to try this out. Sometimes we're irritated with the other people in zazen because they're like moving around and making noise and stuff. Or when?
Coming in late.
Yeah. Yeah. So, or we're just making up a story. Someone who's not even in the room we're irritated with in zazen. If it's something that happened yesterday, right? In either case, it's like here we are in zazen. So then maybe we can catch it. And maybe before jumping to like, okay, just, you know, let go or try or come back to the breath. Maybe to first really just feel how this feels. It feels lousy. But often I just would skip that step. I don't notice that actually I don't want to be spending my zazen time like this. I mean, of course it sounds so obvious, but hard to remember that simple, obvious point. And then with that, then maybe that's enough to just remember, oh, this, I feel like annoyed now. Or immediately it's, you know, turned back from the other person to ourselves. And then then maybe we can also remember, oh, there is this other way of relating. And with little things, like it's just somebody moving in zazen, it may not be a little thing, but we might be able to actually turn it right then of like, oh, may this person be happy. That's maybe really advanced. But this annoying person, may they be happy. And I think that's where we've gone beyond the neutral now. Not exactly like they're an enemy, but somebody who's annoying. And I think we can actually do that, though. May they be happy. I mean, I have tried to do this in zazen because there are annoyances for me in zazen sometimes. And may they be happy. And it just completely like confuses the whole mental energy that's going on. It turns it all, what? The mind's like, what are you talking about? But of course it's like, oh yeah. Yes. Yep.
And it was a recitation of may I be peaceful, happy, and light in body and mind. May I be safe and free from injury. May I be free from affliction, anger, fear, and anxiety. And it's kind of a lot of work.
Nice.
But,
you remember it, though. That's good.
I practiced it this morning.
Yeah, it's amazing. The power of the mind, yeah, to direct an intention like that really has an effect. And to ourself, we don't leave ourselves out, to kind benefactors, to kind of, you know, somewhat good friends, the neutral people. They also say a nice little point in here too is that someone who you're like a kind benefactor, but that you have a lot of attachment with also, could be like a spouse or something. They say, actually try not, don't use that person actually, because then you confuse you start to maybe feel this love, but it's mixed in with attachment. And of course, you wish them loving kindness, but as a practice, if you have a kind benefactor who you don't have a lot of like clingy attachment stuff with, it's better to get used to it. And to notice like, oh, this feeling is, it's more pure maybe. When it's just love without wanting to get something back or without like generating sexual energy or something like that. So that's a little detail in there. And then you're working up to difficult people and then all beings. Yes, Rosie.
Your whole tone of voice when you said welcome at the beginning today, I had to take a double take because I thought, that's the guy behind the counter at the Morrissey Post Office. if anybody has been to anyone yet, tell us.
I know exactly who you are.
And, you know, I have always, he says, well, say it again, how you did.
Welcome.
And he says that every time. I always want, you know, I'm very attached to wanting to get him and so one time I just asked, because I mean, it's just clear, it just floods.
Mm-hmm.
My heart's pretty open, but a lot of the time, you know, when it isn't even, when he says that, it's just like radiating.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked him at one point, I said, you know, what is it that, you know, that makes you so, well, you're always so happy, you know, to be just right here, you know,
yeah,
the next person. And he said, well, at a certain point, I just said to myself, well, I could be happy. I said, well, I could be happy.
That's great. Story.
Being whatever else, so I encourage you, if you want, go to the Morrissey Post Office. He's always in the one on the left. He's not always there. He wasn't there today when I went. I was like, oh.
Yeah, there's people like that. Bodhisattvas in the world.
You know, and the thing is that during your talk, kind of after that, I kept thinking, well, you know, it's like, what do we say, giver, receiver, and gift?
Mm.
Or it's just like no separation.
Yeah.
It's no dual.
Yeah.
It's non-dual that way.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. I mean, can you over-cherish yourself or anybody else without including everybody?
Mm.
I don't know if you can.
Yeah, if it's that real, just open feeling. And then you walk out of the post office and you feel different. Yeah. So the next person you meet, you're in a different space.
It's that whole
Kathy.
Well, I want to underscore something that you said. I've actually practiced a fair amount with what you're talking about. And I also at first thought and worried that it was a contrivance. But I think it's particular. I think that, well, I shouldn't say that. But I think that for those of us who can perseverate with negative thinking,
mm-hmm.
and I'm one of them, that it's an intervention. It's like it breaks the spell.
Uh-huh.
Because when I'm on a rant inside me about thinking, say, about how somebody has done me wrong, that's one of my favorite obsessive thoughts, you know, and then you just start telling the story,
yeah.
and you elaborate the story. There's a kind of a momentum that happens that, you know, it doesn't want to stop. It's an addiction.
Yeah.
And so this intervention, it feels like a contrivance at first, but the moment that you allow for this very other radical type of thinking to be in your mind space, mm. it does transform the energy.
Yeah.
And my experience has been very much seeing the relationship between self and other, because particularly, say, if I'm angry at some... I usually get angry at people who are angry, right? So I tell stories where I'm about people who are angry.
Mm.
And when I begin to wish them ease and well-being and release from their suffering, all of a sudden then I get in touch with that, who's creating all this angry energy is me. They're not in the room.
Yeah.
They're not there. I'm being angry at myself. I'm the receiver of my anger. It's not them.
Yeah.
And so then it does kind of the self-other thing begins to merge, because then if I'm wishing them ease and well-being, I'm actually also touching this one and her anger and her suffering.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So I think that while I agree with Shanti Deva's point that one can generate a lot of happiness by focusing on other, I think that there's also this part which isn't self-cherishing, but which is including oneself in the humanity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it breaks down the self-other thing. And also, when we're, that sense of when we're angry or we're not feeling loving-kindness, we really feel that sense of separation. That's another nice thing to meditate on in Zazen, like the person who's making noise or whatever. You can feel this big distance. And as soon as you do that, not only do you feel a lightness and ease yourself, but then your relationship with the other person is instantly transformed in your mind. Like, oh, that actually, I was totally objectifying the person. They weren't even like a person, you know? It's like there was this wall there, and now it's kind of like, oh, actually, now they're just like me. I want to be happy too. And I would want people to wish me well too. So yeah, it breaks down all the barriers. Yeah. Yeah, Richard.
I've got one that I just fail at, and I'm curious for feedback. And besides the personal offenses one takes, you know, if you think you've been disrespected or things, didn't mean to or something, but I have a habit of watching MSNBC. I could not watch it. That would be one practice, but for me, it's a denial in the sense of a thing that's still out there. And that is that it's what comes over me is this wave of what people are doing out there that, to me, projected out, spells the end of the world. You know, and I go between perplexed and angry. Because I get a sense that, because I see, you know, I get a sense, and I've had contact with these kinds of people, that no matter what you say, you know, there's that dissonance, you know, cognitive, that doesn't matter. They've been sold, you know, or they're said in that. And I recognize it. I say, I don't want to feel this way. Maybe I should turn it off. You know,
I think for you, it might be good to not turn it off. To keep, watch more of it if you can. But then try this practice where you, without thinking about even, putting aside all the content of what they're saying, because I think TV is, you can do this. There's some people in front of you, actual people. You can see virtual people, see if you can feel like, or whatever, however crazy and harmful they are, let me try this out. And maybe try it first with kind benefactors and so on, and yourself. But then may they be happy, you know. See if we can generate that kind of wish, even a little bit, for such people, which doesn't mean we accept what they're doing. That would be different, right? It's just like, it's horrible what they're doing. I have to figure out how to stop them, maybe even, but like, in the meantime, may they be happy, and do we feel some reservation, like, actually, those people, I don't want them to be happy. And then that's where I think we can really do this practice, like, whatever they're doing, however harmful, actually, may they be happy.
Okay, accept it, and I just accept it. Maybe I just haven't had enough, whatever, to meet that challenge. be happy doing bad things. Maybe the feedback from doing bad things should be, I don't want to sit there and wish evil on them or something, but it's like, that they don't get positive return from doing negative things, and there's, that's how you learn, isn't it?
Well, that doesn't need to be, that could be part of the conversation. And also, just to tie it together, I think it may be better to keep it simple and just say, may they be happy. But we could also, if we did a little reasoning, we'd say, well, what brings happiness? What is true happiness? True happiness is when we're actually like in harmony with everybody else. And so when we say, may they be happy, you could say in parentheses, for them to be happy, they're going to have to actually like be kinder to other people themselves. And I wish that for them, but so it doesn't necessarily mean, and it's fine what they're doing. It's like, may they be happy, really completely happy by realizing their Buddha nature. And I hope that they can do that. And then that'll help us too. Yeah.
Can I join in? Uh-huh. How about wishing that they change their mind calm. See, yeah. The thing I hear in Richard in what you're saying is I'm hearing you're suffering.
Right.
And so that's the thing that, you know, you can go and vote, try to vote them out, or you can write letters to the editor or send money to organizations or whatever kind of action, you know, you do. But you are suffering.
Right.
You know, and that's what I notice. Like, if I'm agitating myself over something that I disagree with, I'm the one who's suffering. They don't care. You know, so how can I calm my own energy? And maybe if I can't wish them to be happy because I don't really want them to be happy or I'm not there yet, maybe I could wish, may Sarah Palin, you know, get more open-minded. You know, whatever, I don't know. May so-and-so become less homophobic. May so-and-so's daughter come out so he has to find some kindness in his heart. I don't know, that's maybe a compromise.
Yeah, maybe a compromise. I think we could. But maybe, you know what you said, I thought what you were going to say when you said, I'm actually suffering. I thought, well, yeah, actually, that's the first thing, is may I be happy? I'm getting really worked up over this news show. First of all, before we do any loving kindness to them, first, may I be happy watching this at ease. May I find some ease in the midst of the crazy world. And like, okay, I'm settling down a little bit. And then it would be like a more advanced step to may, almost like, maybe you could combine these. May they change their mind so they can actually be more happy. Because actually, they're not happy. Because the people who are mad, angry at like that, I think we're pretty clear that they're not really happy. and we want them to be, but we want them, usually we want them to change, that's the main thing, and if they get happier, that's okay. But it's sort of like shifting the priorities. May they change their mind in order to be happy, and that'll also benefit me and the world.
Yeah, in order to save lions and cheetahs and
yeah, everything. All of it. Yes, Gene.
I agree with you that the mental condition affects feeling. And that's very clear from all of our examples. And I also think it works in the other direction for me.
Hmm.
So, for example, the sensation of caution or fear for me is accompanied by some tension in my shoulders.
Mm-hmm.
Or anxiety is accompanied by some movement in my hands and arms.
Mm.
So I can, or we can say, as is common, when the muscles of the face are in a smile, that's often associated with happy.
Mm.
Not necessarily, but often. So I can say, may this one be happy. Well, how do we actually do that? May this one be relaxed or at ease. How do we actually do that? For me, starting with the body sensation, unclench my fist would be a start, and see what happens to the
meditation.
Or relax the shoulders and see what happens with the mental permutations of fear. So starting with the body practice of finding out what's going on with the actual physical sensations affects the
Well, I think we're happy. We might even define as like a mental and physical state. Actually,
no separation.
And I think Liz's longer, you know, with more words in there. Maybe I think you mentioned relaxed. Light and body and mind, with no difference. And so, so that's true. Yeah, may I be happy, starting with, may I relax the body and, body, mind together state. I think happiness, I don't know how happiness or like sukha, I think in the tradition, I think is actually mental and physical well-being, how about last question too, because it's getting late.
I find that whenever I'm upset, a good pattern for me is I'm never upset for the reason I think. It's a perception of the situation that's making me upset.
Yeah.
I realize it's my intention that drives my perception. So if I am attacking someone,
Good point. Amazing, huh? These things that we just, that are quite simple, right? When we remember them and try them out, it's like, oh yeah. But isn't it amazing that as humans we just forget all about those so much of the time?
You could be right, you could be kind.
yeah, that's a good one. Today. We'll have a moment of silence in which we could just be. Or we could actually wish Peter and his Elizabeth and Peter's children happiness and well-being. We offer any well-being generated this evening to the happiness and well-being of everyone, everywhere, spreading it. endlessly throughout the universe. Beings are numberless, I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible, I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless, I vow to enter them. Buddha's